Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for All Mankind on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking season 4, episode 6, Leningrad. Aaron, Leningrad, what do you know about it?
It's a tale of two cities. Sometimes it's Leningrad, sometimes it's Stalingrad.
Sometimes it's St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg, yeah. Tale of three cities, oh my god.
Uh-huh. Yeah, apparently the city has changed names a lot, and this is one of the names that it had. Now it's St. Petersburg, and I assume that's where the conferences are taking place in this episode.
Yes, seems like it.
I don't know if they ever explicitly told us that, but they refer to Moscow a few times, and I don't think they just mean the government of the USSR.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what do you think of this episode?
I think this is a tale of two episodes. There is an episode of For All Mankind that's firing on all thrusters, so to speak, and I'm really engaged with it, and I think it's cool. And there is a shitty crime subplot and an organized labor subplot that is encapsulated within this other good episode that I find baffling. What do you make of Miles Corleone here?
Miles Corleone. Uh-huh. This is something that I thought from the start was bound to happen. Miles seemed like the kind of guy who would want to disrupt what's going on here so that he could get his piece of it and maybe take it over. And eventually that happened. It just didn't happen in the way I expected it to, or a way that maybe I believe really would happen. I don't know. There's still some fallout, I think, from all of this to come, but so far it's a little rough.
He feels a lot closer to Fredo, Sonny at best, than Michael. Because, like, sure. Michael was like a
He's
war hero.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was some substance to him already coming into, like, you know, he doesn't just blow a cop's head off out of nowhere. Like, they make a point in that movie that he's used to combat and that kind of stress. Where does Miles get this spine to just boss up and get North Korean muscle?
And
plan all this in the middle of the holiest of holies in the North Korean compound?
Uh-huh.
I just feel like they needed multiple plot points to line up for him, and it's driving the pacing and not the, like, characters. This doesn't feel, none of these things feel like natural characters doing natural things. They feel like people hitting their marks. And it's in such stark contrast to the other stuff that's happening, like, on Earth that, and you know, and even, like, God, I was so curious to see how Ed was going to react. And it turns out Ed's just a rabble-rousing shit-stir from way back in Korea, apparently. He's just like, anytime that things go wrong, he just turns into, like, Hogan's Heroes and goes to work.
Still sniffing mouse-ass Ed is out there riling up the people. He's now the new union leader? I don't know. I kind of like it. Because all of this is, like, a way to stick it to Danielle, right? Like, he doesn't actually give a shit about these
people. And maybe that's a point they're making, that sometimes, like, you need people who are not, like, who are facetious and hypocritical, but are powerful and on, like any person that you can use for your movement. But, like, also maybe that's a problem with labor movements that, you know, and I think they're going to try to make this connection between organized crime and labor, too. Ultimately where I think they're going with this, you know?
Yeah, that wasn't on my radar, but you're right.
Yeah.
Is it the Jimmy Hoffa? I mean, who?
That's what I'm saying. I actually thought, like, I bet that when the Russians do the math and the North Koreans do the math, now that Ed has gotten into, like, the game, they're going to think that he is trying to be, they're not going to think it's Milosh. Milosh would never do this. I kind of think Ed might be buried out in the Martian football field.
He's going to be on level 4. No one's ever going to find his body.
He's going to be
built into the
buried,
wall.
He's going to be buried out in the Martian Lands stadium. Uh-huh. And it's just a really bizarre turn for that character. And I love the idea of Martian labor uniting, but it's just weird to go see Ed Baldwin go from suck it up buttercup to you have nothing to lose but your chains And mm-hmm. it's all in, and yeah, like I said, I like Ed's character, and it just kind of sucks to see him be this big of a shit.
Yeah, no, he sucks this season. And it's not the only season he's sucked in. Like, I look, at some point they had to literally point a gun at him and threaten to murder him to get him to do the right thing.
Sally Ride of all, yeah.
Uh-huh. So, like, it's not the first time, but definitely, like, it's a hard pill to swallow when it happens because you want to like Ed. At least I do.
And yeah.
I think, so I'm looking at the motivations here in the plot, and I'm thinking, okay, everybody's motivations, I think, are kind of lining up, right? Like, even Ed, when he's being a shit, I understand why. He wants to, he's uh-huh. yeah. hurt about Svetlana and his own declining physical capabilities, and he wants to lash out, and this sure. is the way he can do it. And then I look at Miles and I say, okay, well, he wants money. He feels like he is going to get out there and grab a piece of a bigger pie, and he can really impress his family. And his family, you know, with Ilya kicking him out of the operation here, is now in danger. He's in danger of losing that. So I get his motivations for everything. I think that all lines up. It's just the way you go about it. Like, what, how does Lee convince the rest of his people to go beat up one of the Americans? Like, did he lie to them? I mean, because he can't tell them, I'm trying to sneak my wife out of our country and violate every law we have, become a traitor. Will you guys help me?
Do you remember how Lee started this season getting the whip cracked on him because he thought about uh-huh. smiling at an American? He's uh-huh. not. Then now he's like just like got half the base under his thumb. I they did not tell that story. I don't think they did.
Yeah. And that's the major problem I have with it is I just don't feel like all the pieces have connected well enough, because you can tell that story. Certainly.
Yeah.
There could be scenes where he goes to his commanding officer and says, look, I'm hurting here. I want to see my wife. I just want to talk with her. There's a way for me to do that. Please let me. And maybe he's sympathetic. You know, maybe he can convince him. But they didn't do that at all.
But you also got to tell, like, why the other North Koreans are kind of getting... Maybe they're getting... They're far enough away from North Korea that they no longer feel the lash. That, you know, they're getting a little
maybe
bit of independence.
Maybe he's getting them, personal massagers. I don't know.
The crime and the grift and the black market stuff and the money is starting to kind of influence them. But it's like, no, they haven't done any of that stuff. And now Miles has to deliver on what I consider an impossible task. And my mind's open. Like, I'm prepared to be blown away by the cleverness of the solution to get Lee's wife to Mars, or the complication that makes it impossible, or whatever. Sure. But I gotta say, this is a high degree of difficulty move, and I'm the East German judge waiting to give him a zero on it if they fuck it up. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to move on to the stuff I actually like, because, you know, that's presumably why people are here listening to the fucking podcast, is they're a fan of the show. We both said it was a high degree of difficulty to reintegrate Margot publicly into the plot. I think they did that perfectly.
I love that scene between her and Elaida where she reveals... Well, the one after she reveals that she's alive, where they actually...
Every aspect of it, though. I like the first reaction. Yeah. I like the second reaction. Yeah. I love the third reaction. I love how the publicity of it was handled. That shit felt real. That felt like what would happen.
And they spent a lot of time on that, and I think that's why that pays off so well.
Yeah, yeah. I got a bitch because I got a bunch of questions. Like redirecting a 1 kilometer wide asteroid towards Earth.
Dangerous.
With mention of the DART program, which is to prevent just such an occurrence.
Uh huh.
The scope of the space disaster that could cause.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be something they're going to lean into, right?
It has to be. I mean, the first thing I thought when they said, yeah, we're going to push this thing toward Earth is, that's real risky, guys.
Yeah, but for $20 trillion, you're wagering, I don't think that'd be an extinction level event, but that would not be a good time for Earth and its civilization.
Wherever it hits is completely screwed.
I feel like they have. That's got to be their direction they're going. And
question is, are they going to play with that and tease it, or are they going to actually have it be a crisis? Because, like, the idea that, oh, our mount system could fail at any time, and oops, it goes off in a direction we didn't expect, and it could possibly hit Earth. is very real, and they've set that up throughout the season. But
yep.
My question is, will that be the crisis, or will there be some other crisis going along with it, and that'll be kind of a tease?
Yeah, and they're going to, you know, we already seen the Russian materials, you know, deficiency, and like now they're going to be running at warp speed. And
America still hasn't figured that out, as best I can tell.
It doesn't seem like it. Although, maybe that is why the Russians, if you want to read between the lines and say that's why the Russians and Americans seem to be kind of at a more friendly spot than they were an episode ago, it's because, you know, Gore apologized for his stupid shit, and the Russians apologized for the material deficiencies, and they came clean about it. It does feel like America and Russia, after the coup, are starting to rebuild. You know, now with $20 trillion in the offing, yeah, there's a huge carrot to incentivize all this. But and then I also like the politics. Like, it is beyond frustrating to see politicians, you know, decide not to go for a huge windfall for the planet just because they won't be able. I mean, it's the opposite of this wisdom you hear, this like Ben Franklin bullshit. It's like, you know, great nations are born when old men plant the trees, the shade of which they'll never know. Like, we all, that's this, I feel like that's shit you tell children. And then you get to adults and it's like, nah, that, nah, fucking cut those trees down. That's the hard word's worth money. Like, yeah.
Or maybe that's true when you're writing a constitution, but maybe not so true 200 years later when people are trying to keep their fucking jobs, you know?
Yeah, as from what I know of history, I don't think there's ever been a shining era where people were not self-interested and were
more or less so.
Yeah, it's super frustrating, but again, it feels super real. Like, it's, you know, we talked about how almost miraculous the moon program was. Like, it's kind of an open question. It's always been for me, is like, if Jack Kennedy hadn't died, and the whole nation kind of been like, fucking, we got to do this for Jack, and it's super politically important, and the competition with the Russians too, would we have gone to the moon, or would we gotten 5 years into the program and then be like, this is super expensive to, you know, what's even up there?
Well, and it's the changing of the guard, right? Like, having a presidency that rolls out to a new person every 4 years makes it impossible to get long-term plans done because the next person isn't necessarily on board with them.
Why do you want to cross the T of the other guy's project, which, you know, they're going to get, you know, you're going to be like, I'm fulfilling the vision of my predecessor, who's probably not even from the political party I'm affiliated with. Like, nothing is set up.
And I can get a short-term win here by just cutting that program and saving a bunch of money and putting it elsewhere to goals that people are now more interested in. And whole host of reasons why that stuff is hard, if not impossible. Yeah.
And I really like how they explore that. And so that stuff is really good. It's just I feel like the crime plot and the labor plot, unfortunately, even though those could be super interesting and they might be interesting in the future, they have just really tried to go from, they haven't cooked that from scratch. They used a baking mix. I don't even think they used the right ingredients to try to substitute applesauce for oil. Baked it at 500 instead of 350. It's just kind of a mess.
Yeah, like gluten-free bread. I'm curious how they're going to bring it around to, you know, that Star Trek ideal. Because if you have these political systems in place, it does seem like a foregone conclusion that you can't think long term. So, how do you get past that? Do you have to destroy those systems, create something new that is more, I guess, equipped to think long term for the benefit of humanity? Or can you work within those systems to kind of artificially create a system that does that?
Right. Because that's the thesis I like about this is the systems that we have on Earth are the things that perpetuate like crime and inequality and things like that. So it's like where we also know, and the Soviet Union had different problems. They weren't the same problems as America. They had their pluses and minuses, as did we. But like, I've often wondered is like, are we going to come out of here with like some kind of synthesis? You know, some kind of, what does that look like? Just like a social democracy? American style socialism. I don't know what the show's suggestion for like, how do you get to the Star Trek utopia?
And I don't think it's coming this season, but at some point, if that's their goal, they got to get around to that stuff.
And I do think this is like this is the most they've gotten into the purely political and socioeconomic, you know. So yeah. Like it seems like they are trying to get there. It's just I just wish it was a little better written. But I guess that's the other thing. It's like before when they've done a little bit of like rewriting history, it was like addressing the wrongs that we've already, you know, kind of come around on, like, oh, let's get women involved a little bit earlier, you know, let's not be so hard on the gays, let's stop this kind of petty squabbling over planting flags here and there and just kind of work together in and out. When you're starting to go like, okay, well, now what, how do we get from where we're at now to where we need to be in the future, that's a lot harder. Oh, because yeah. You know, you got to start making some firm stands on real world economics and
paying, you know, some prices, you know. They're just right. It's painful to change from one system to another for a lot of people, and those people aren't going to be happy about it. How do you make it as easy for them as possible?
Yeah, the, you know, the one of the ideas of you know, why don't we just go migrate to cleaner green technology right now is because, well, that would put a lot of people out of jobs, and that would make a lot of infrastructure obsolete, and there's still some ROI left on on the books for those projects, and it just comes down to that, you know.
Uh-huh. A lot of the time.
And if you're wanting to decry that as foolishness, do you do that when it hits your pocketbook, you know?
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, so I like that.
Podcasters, I'm not sure I'll be singing the same tune.
That's, yeah, I mean, now we're talking serious business. You know, energy independence, one thing, but podcasting independence, vital to the nation's security.
All right, we got to get out of this. We got to get out of this discussion and into the recap, man.
Did you know Al Gore invented podcasting?
He said so, yeah.
Was his bill to increase Apple investment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It led to two things, the iPod and Honeycrisp apples, and immeasurably improved the world.
You know what, apparently, according to Apple, does not improve the world is smoking. There's a smoking warning at the beginning of this episode, which was interesting.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Neither.
And certainly smoking has been a bigger part of the plots in future and past episodes, you know, the whole Gordo Tracy.
I mean, look at NASA
subplot.
In the 60s. My God.
Smoked like they were on fire. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was really weird to see that come up, but okay. Sure.
It is interesting.
It is hazardous to your health.
It is interesting because we grew up in a world where tobacco products were being slowly exterminated and eliminated. And we now live in a world where tobacco has somehow managed to outmaneuver our politicians in this vape thing, and now that like teenage rates of not smoking but tobacco use are like skyrocketing higher than they've ever been before, it's like, goddamn.
I'm waiting for 20 years from now the reports on popcorn lung. That's what I'm waiting for, because, you know, sure, if vaping is healthy, or, you know, at least not as terrible as smoking, I'm kind of all for it for smokers, you know. But yeah, I don't know that we need to be hooking our kids on it.
Well, call me Orville Redenbacher, because I'm not going to dodge that bullet if it comes down to it, Jim.
Oh yeah,
the lungs might be a Jiffy Pop. We'll see. Hold, cross my fingers on the how the science on that works out.
All right, let's get into the recap. You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Hi, Bob. Welcome back to more For All Mankind.
Yep.
We start off with the meeting of the M7. Out there in St. Petersburg, dignitaries arrive as Margo watches from a storeroom via camera and feeds Arena information via radio. This entire episode, she sees Hobson and Aleda enter and watches her very closely. And then Arena starts the proceedings and we go to the intro.
Margo's devolving into a full goblin was pretty awesome. Like, this is what she says. Mm-hmm. She says she's all about the work, and we believe her because she lives, like, she's obsessed with it. But her, like, squatted in that broom closet. Like, she's the, what's the dude with the red swing line from Office Space, you know?
Milton, yeah.
Yeah, Milton. I thought it was really funny. There's a lot of comedy milked from the little telephone game that her and Bullfinch were playing the whole episode, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I was trying to, like, look at the pauses between someone speaking and Arena responding, you know, because she's got to wait for the information to come through from Margo in full. She doesn't seem to be responding in real time, just parroting Margo. And there were a couple of times where it felt a bit long, but she's processing, like, big, heavy concepts and hard problems to wrestle with. So I think the pausing was appropriate.
In a second language, so you kind of, like, she might fumble for her words on these technical terms, and even her fucking up a couple of the technical terms, I think, kind of sold, yeah, like Bart, oh, you know, my English, it'd be too suspicious if she knew that chapter verse with no fuck up. So I thought that was, like I said, I was ready to roast this plot because I thought they might not handle it just, but I think they did.
And they avoided, you know, any insane stuff like Arena just having her front and center at this conference, or
Alita walking at the door, my god, Margo, you know.
All right, well, let's go up to Happy Valley, where Ed wakes up without a job. He has nothing to do, so he smokes up, he makes some rounds shaking hands, and then invites himself to Ilya's, which freaks out the patrons. Admiral walks into your black market bar is not good.
when he walked out into that hallway, it was a lot of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man 3 Venom suit channeling, because he's just, you know, high as a kite. And you can see that, like, people, you know, he's not exactly the most popular figure amongst the sub-basement dwellers, and they're not giving him super friendly looks. And but yeah, just him kind of bopping and smooshing along. And
I love it.
On second watch, when you know his, I guess, internal reputation as like the still booze hound, my only note is I kind of wish they showed him like rapping on a few other panels, because you know he knows, like, the grow op is proof that he knows the angles. He walks in these rooms and yeah, I can see, but like the fact that he almost like a literal bloodhound.
He's a
like
still
he's Toucan Sam, just follows just like one of those, you know, cartoon hobos that are homing in on a
drifting
warm,
warm apple pie
sitting on the sill. I kind of wish he'd kind of like to see him going down a couple of empty corridors, but that's pretty minor criticism. It's
and I think Joel Kinnaman is doing such an amazing job playing an old actor, space cowboy at this point. Like the way he's moving, like I know he's doing that little bop thing down the hallway here, but like you said, he's high as a kite right now, but the physicality he's bringing to this role is perfect.
Little loose in the hips, he's got a little bit of a hunch, a little bit, you know, his neck's a little bent forward.
He's moving like a really old guy who's still in good shape, but like he's still very mobile, but he's old. He's old.
Because we see him, you know, he's doing those modified push-ups and sit-ups, and he's hitting the bike. He's keeping himself trim, but...
Yeah, I did love those easy push-ups. You're in micro... Well, you're not in microgravity, but you're in one-third gravity, man. If you can't do a push-up on Mars, you're in
bad
shape.
That's true. He's doing modified push-ups on Mars. Yeah.
That's kind of unbelievable, but whatever. It was funny.
I do wish maybe they had spent a little bit more time, because I feel like the show only remembers that Mars is one third Earth's gravity when like it's relevant to like Kelly's son's medical condition.
We
talked about that on you know The Expanse, how they were variable and how well they treated microgravity versus like lunar gravity and Martian gravity, but this show just they don't even really try.
They did it fairly well, I thought, when Miles fell in that canyon, because I was thinking, oh, it's, you know, it's low gravity, he'll be fine, and he was
right. But and actually just moving around and all that stuff, they're not giving a fuck about it.
So this is interesting, him in light of what happens later in the episode, him making friends with Ilya here. I think, like earlier I said, there's still probably some fallout to come from Miles taking over Ilya's operation, and I think Ed might be a key component of that as senior project manager and still some sway on the base. People still respect and fear him. I wonder if he won't help Ilya out.
See, that's a possibility, but I've so locked on to the idea that this is going to be... a mistaken identity kind of thing, that Ed, for his own reasons, is muscling on Ilya and his labor thing, and it's going to be interpreted by the like Russians and North Koreans as him. Well, yeah, he's out of work. He's desperate to cling to power, make some money. He's getting into the underworld, and I think he's gonna. I think they're gonna try to assassinate him. I know we were joking about it, but like, I do think, I think they're positioning him as like a patsy figure.
Wow. How would I feel if that's how Ed goes out, assassinated by some dumbass from Louisiana who couldn't even hold down a job?
I think it's a Tony Soprano situation where he's going to send up his dumb uncle, you know, and dodge all the. But that's such a bizarre end for Ed Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while in history that happens, you know.
Sure.
Benedict Arnold, you know, not everybody gets to die the hero.
No, it's true. All right, let's go over to Hobson, who tells the conference that they can launch a capture mission in 8 weeks, and then Aleta lays out the necessary technology they need to develop to harvest that asteroid. which is going to be both enormously difficult and enormously expensive, crucially. Helios needs $2 trillion to pull it off, and everyone at the conference balks at that expense. 10x is not a good enough ROI for them, at least over 40 years.
Yeah, but that's the other. I mean, it's not just even the ROI, because I think you're supposed to understand through the lens of the rest of the season that the other problem with a 40-year ROI is it gives the larger, more powerful nations a chance to rip up the contract and change everybody's bonus structures. You know, like the longer that goes and the more unexpected things are going to happen, the more time the deals can be renegotiated, the more times governments are going to change hands, and that makes it even more likely. So it's like, it's like a prisoner dilemma, right? You know, like if both people refuse to play the game, that's the best impact. But since if you are betrayed and you don't betray the other guy, that's the worst thing that can happen. The rational thing is to both betray.
Right.
So you get the bullshit mediocre rewards, and that. This is, we're living in a bullshit mediocre reward planet with rare exception today. So yeah. it's and that's the problem. It's a rational thing to do, and I don't know how we'll ever get out of it. And I hope the show holds up a candle to that door,
at the very least. Yeah. Let's go back to Happy Valley. Danielle and Palmer go over the mission parameters and are similarly stunned by the scope of them. And the timeline. Palmer doesn't think they can make it happen. Danielle tells him, I'm going to get that rock or I'm going to die trying.
I like her sentiment. Can you where are you at with the possibility of this being pulled off? Because I hear 8-week launch window and I see this laundry list. And I understand a lot of it is post-capture. It's like to exploit the thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But like just the project of grabbing the asteroid and slowing it down in 8 weeks seems not possible. Like I'm really looking and I've got a bad feeling that we're not going to be sold on the possibility. We're going to have, well, Margo and Aleda talked it out in a silent scene with music playing underneath. And we know Margo and Aleda are brilliant. So let's just go with it. Just go with it. We're going to stick a spaceship to this thing. And
that would be sad because I feel like they've talked out they've spelled out every other plan in this series.
You're right. They did. And they did do it this one. So like maybe they will. They'll walk us through it. But I'm a little worried that they're going to just sleight of hand this whole thing. And it's a shame because a lot of the appeal for this show to me has been not just the characters. And, you know, because if you don't care about that, nothing else matters.
Right, right.
But the thing that's really gave extra intrigue is the technical solutions, the MacGyvering, the Apollo 13 of everything, and
seeing clever people work together to solve hard problems.
Yeah, like Apollo 13 would not be the movie it was if, you know, Tom Hanks is sitting there. All right, NASA, what are we going to do? It's like, all right, do you got duct tape? And then they just then you know, one day later, they're hitting the atmosphere solved. And coming home. Like, no, I gotta see Tom Hanks with the square filters and the sandwich bags and he's got to be flinging them at what's his face and I want to see that. I want that technical detail, but it's hard to sweat those technical details. So
yeah, especially when you start to get into science fiction type stuff, right? Then how do you explain things to people in realistic terms that don't come off as silly? Yeah, I don't know. I think they've done a good job up to now, and I'm hoping that they will clue us into this plan before they actually execute it. But we'll see.
There's a young upstart hotshot scientist at NASA by the name of Zephram Cochran. He's got some bold ideas about antimatter and dilithium crystals. We'll see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. No one's taking him seriously, so he starts building a rocket in his backyard. I thought there was some pretty fun comedy here with Palmer looking at the plan and going, Jesus fucking Christ. Danielle giving him the look and him going, oh, sorry, holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
Much better, XO. Yeah. Love that stuff. All right. Ed gives Ilya some advice on his distilling process. The still sniffer talking about Ilya's cinnamon mouse ass. This is just comedy.
What does that even mean? Cinnamon flavored mouse ass.
Just
the mouse ass I get.
Cinnamon I've never tasted.
I'm saying I could see how the flavor of mouse would get into contaminated lines, but cinnamon? Like, is this some kind of ratatouille situation where he's, you know...
I mean, it depends on what he's using to... what he's distilling down. I mean, what's his mash like, you know? Has he got corn up there, or is he using some, you know, sweaty
apple
NASA
pie
socks?
Like, what's he did? Just he fermenting apple pies, getting cinnamon stuck in there?
Maybe. I don't know what he's using. I don't know. Look, there are a lot of ways to describe weird flavors in alcohol.
True.
People come up with some crazy shit. So Cinnamon Mouse asks, not the weirdest I've heard. I hung out with a sommelier for a while.
I really liked Ed's like Forrest Gump, Bubba-esque like rundown of all the places that he's experienced black markets and shine. Mm-hmm. Carriers, cruisers, mash units, isolation chambers, jail cells, churches, moon bases, space stations. Like it's really funny. And he launches on that list a second time and Illy cuts him off. But it's like I said, this is fundamentally feels like a betrayal of a character I love, but it's also undeniably fun to see it happening.
Absolutely.
You know, if this was a one-off Christmas episode, I would feel a lot better than this being a permanent bend to the moral arc of Ed Baldwin's character. But we'll see where it goes.
I mean, look, man, he grew up in what, the Navy? Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
And every story I've heard from those Navy guys is all about how there's, underground operations on every ship, every port, every base you go to. They're going to have a way of getting what they need.
I 100% believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that Ed would be a part of that, especially in his younger days. Hell yeah.
Yeah. No, Navy are crazy and crucially also Marine adjacent. So the hijinks that that whole branch of service gets up to, pretty legendary.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sam tries to convince her colleagues to form a union so that they can use their temporary leverage with this asteroid stuff to grab a piece of the pie. I feel like they cut this scene off too early, or I feel like the story they're telling here is that Sam is not the person to lead this union. She has the right ideas, but she's unable to convince people to follow her. And in my mind, it's because she doesn't follow through on the logical argument to its natural conclusion. Because you got her explaining, like, hey, you're going to be doing a very dangerous job. Guy comes back and says, yeah, I'm going to be doing it, but I'm going to die with a dead man's smile, or a rich man's smile, rather.
Uh-huh.
Natural argument there is, how are you going to have a rich man's smile when you're working 24/7 to earn that money?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going to work you to the bone. You're not going to be enjoying that process. And then when you die, you're not going to be able to use it.
I mean, this is the classic difficulty of trying to get like labor and any kind of solidarity movements going is, you know, we talked about the prisoner's dilemma. Raising people's class consciousness is essentially saying, okay, we understand that we'd all be better off if we do the betray option. Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But hear me out. What if we all agree to do the cooperate one? Knowing that if there's enough people willing to do the betrayal as scabs, if you know that the management is going to act in bad faith and have the full force and power of the government behind them to act against you, mm-hmm. that's a dangerous thing to do because you're getting paid. What if you lose your job, you lose your bonuses, you get sent home, and you're billed $150,000 after all this, like what happened with the moon guys? I love that they checked the moon thing. And I also love that Sam's like, well, it's not like the moon because they could shut that down, ship everybody home and be back in business in 2 days. We've got them by the balls here because they've got a month, 8 weeks to turn this around and that asteroid's gone.
Yeah.
So our power will never be. It's all good stuff, but it's just also mm-hmm. underlines how hard it is because people don't want to fucking organize and strike and do all that shit. People want to get paid.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Risking it all to get a little bit more is always a tough proposition. But on the other hand, it's also got a winning history behind it. If you can get everybody in line, you know?
And it's short-term thinking versus long-term thinking, right? In the short term, hey, look, I'm going to get my bonuses. I'm going to make out like a bandit here temporarily. Yeah. What's the problem? Well, if you think long-term, what if you made out like a bandit for the rest of your life?
Right.
You know? And also sacrificed a little right now to make that happen.
Yeah. Well, you secure these benefits for all posterity. I mean, the reason we have holidays and a 5-day work week instead of 7 days mm-hmm. a week until we die is because of, you know, blood in the streets, essentially. So yeah. You got to have people making that irrational decision for themselves and their family to make the rational long-term bet for all of their work, all of their fellow class members. And that's just historically been very hard to do.
The thing
but
about
so it's good
this,
stuff,
though.
Right? It's just this uh-huh. is such, I think, an underwritten part of the season that it kind of feels perfunctory. But also we're, okay. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Maybe we're ready for like fast tracking this stuff. Cause you look around the country, like the labor is kind of resurgent right now. Like they've had some huge, important victories, big ones with the auto workers in Hollywood, down mm-hmm. to like service industries. Like there's a lot, there's changes in the air.
Starbucks,
after.
Amazon, like
so maybe maybe we're there and we're like the audience is ready to go along with it, but.
Yeah,
I think
maybe.
it was a chance to do a better job of shoring that stuff up. I think
there's a little bit of ironic discomfort in this scene too, or I guess not in this scene, but in future scenes, because there is this moment that they can capture bigger piece of the pie, and they have huge leverage. But all of that is kind of done away with by the end. They've missed that opportunity by the end. The opportunity never actually presented itself.
Well,
right?
I thought so too, but then I thought about, no, I think what they're saying is they still have to capture the asteroid. They still have to divert it to Earth, and Earth can't do that by themselves. So they have a much shorter window.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the
because if they don't
really
put the brakes on at Mars, Earth gets fucked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to miss it entirely.
Oh, Jesus. Is there a Marco and Aros possibility where it's like Martians like, you know what's better than economic leverage? We've got we're going to take control of this base. We got the finger on the thruster button. We can steer this into Earth orbit, or we can steer it into Earth. Uh-huh. Pay us, fuckers.
And we're out here by the belt. We can keep them coming.
Yeah, there's no shortage of these things. Oh, my God.
No,
oh, my God.
Maybe we are just going for the Expanse. Screw the Star Trek stuff. It's time for the Expanse.
I mean, they usually... I mean, that's... I'm wanting them to recapture past glories, because I remember seasons where I thought, oh, they're going to escalate this in obvious ways, and oh, my God, there's a war on the moon. Like, shit gets out of control sometimes, and I'm kind of looking like, where could things get out of control? And I could just see Sam with like a Rambo style headband in the command center, and it's smoking, and there's base commanders hung up, Danielle Poole's hung upside down by her boots like Mussolini, and
maybe it'll be the North Koreans. They'll be targeting this asteroid at like one of the other M7 or something.
I mean, shit, they fought the capitalist devils before.
Mm-hmm.
So they could do it again.
All right, let's go back to the conference where Arena engages Eli and Elaida in conversation, and she tells Elaida that they don't like the ROI, the 10x ROI on this project, because it would take 30 or 40 years to see it. Eli and Arena are considering dropping the whole operation until Eli has the idea to redirect the asteroid to Earth so they can mine it in orbit rather than on Mars, and everyone likes that idea, including Margo.
Do you think the Bullfinch made a bit of an unforced error by trying to really hammer home Margo's loyalties here?
She's leaning pretty hard on that.
Why would you gloat so quickly over something so sensitive? Just let that like let the trap work, man. Let the noose get close tighter around the neck. Let the trap door swing a little bit more shut.
I didn't notice it so much here in this scene, but later in the episode, she goes even harder on that, and I definitely noticed in that scene. I was like, you are risking alienating this person who you kind of need at this moment. Just to like get a jab in. It almost felt personal in a weird way.
Do you want a triple agent? Because this is how you get a triple agent. You know, like for someone who spouts as much stuff about how no one will ever trust Margo, the Bullfinch seems to put a lot of trust in Margo.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if she thinks that that episode in the gulag really had an effect and scared her communist, but like,
I don't know. Those experiences tend to have the opposite long term. Like short term, yeah. Sure, but long term, mm-hmm. You know, fuck these guys.
Right. The thing I did like about this scene is how much Margot and Elaida, without knowing it, are on the same page, especially from Elaida's side, right? She doesn't know Margot's involved in this conversation, but she's saying the exact same things, and Margot's nodding along, and no, you see that simpatico relationship that they had before all this stuff went down. I love it.
Yeah, yeah, and they're both, like, you know, singing from the same hymnal. I thought that was pretty good, And I thought what was the other thing? Oh, what did you make of the fact that they put Elaida in a dorm room? Is that a power play? And if it's a power play, why did they do it to her and not Marv?
Because maybe they don't like capitalism. I don't know. I'm always trying to remind myself she's there representing Helios.
See, I think if the Soviets wanted to really stick it to the capitalists, they would put Marv and the executive class in the dorm, and they would put Elaida and the kind of more blue collar. Now, Elaida's not really blue collar at this point, but they'd put the workers, the engineers, et cetera, et cetera. They'd put them in the finest accommodations. It was a weird, I felt like it was a power play, but I wasn't sure what play was being made.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't really know what they're getting at there. Let's go back up to Mars, where Ilya gives Ed drinks on the house for his distilling advice, and Ed reveals that he also knows about his black market import business, but Ilya doesn't really want to talk about it here.
This is where I think Ed's going to get misconstrued, you know, and I think that is Miles getting stonewalled by the rock exporter a direct result of this scene? Because on second watch, I took that as gospel, that there's a cause and effect here, that Ilya was already planning on cutting Miles out. But Ed, like, coming and sniffing around his business, he saw as a threat. And I think he associates Miles together. I might be wrong on that.
Or Miles is doing a very risky thing and he needs to cut some of that risk down.
Yeah. 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 That there's now heat. Like, I got the Admiral sniffing around, but they're connected. And I'm since they are connected, even if it's a coincidence, well, it is a coincidence. Ed's not there because he wants to muscle in on the territory.
That's
one of my big theories right now, that Ed's going to get caught up in this and he's going to be on both sides. He's going to, like, Helios is going to want him dead. The U.S. government's going to want him dead. The Russians are going to want him dead. The Russian underground's going to want him dead.
I just cannot wait for Dev to get up here. I cannot wait for it.
Oh,
man.
Fuck. I even forgot about that. The fact that Kelly and because they checked him in, you know, it's like you see Ed, like, you know, seeing them saying, hey, Poppy, we're on the flight here. Dev's with them. Because, you know, like, because, like, conceivably, Ed Baldwin could be the main reason Earth doesn't get a $20 trillion windfall. Mm-hmm. They could change everyone's life for the better. Like, just and for petty personal wrong, not even pet, the wrong reasons. He's just wrong. He's wrong.
He is. No, I'm with you.
What a bastard.
It's fun to watch him do these things, but he's doing them totally for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
All right, Miles goes over to the loading dock to speak with his smuggling contact, but she says the operation is over and Miles is threatened by the Man Mountain, Petros. This guy's big.
He is. He puts out like his whole fucking, I think his whole hand wraps around Miles' throat and his, like, middle finger and thumb touch at the back. Like, he's got big mitts. T-minus 3 seconds until the ad. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Touchdown, and we're back.
And I don't think Miles is a small guy necessarily, but this guy's huge.
Yeah.
It almost surprises me when the North Koreans roll up and they're just as big as him. That was shocking.
Yeah.
Because this guy's huge. Yeah.
And I don't think they're just as big, but
one of them
they're rolling deep. They got like 3-4 dudes.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know if any one of them is as massive, but they could Voltron together and shut this shit down.
Yeah, that's how I bet it happened.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's go back to the conference where Aleta, Eli, and Arena discuss the plan to get the asteroid to Earth. They're working the problem here. Margo suggests that they use the plans from the DART program to do it, which was a asteroid deflection program designed to protect Earth in the case of a asteroid headed their way. Aleta shoots down kind of each aspect of this, each potential plan, and Margo suggests that they work the problem, and Arena immediately says, "I need a break." That's pretty funny. We must work the problem. I need a break.
Yeah, but because she realizes, like, how the hell am I going to get in between these people? And
yeah. She's out of her depth and talking, and it's a cumbersome process having Margo.
Oh, yeah.
And probably a taxing process on her. Like, second languages, being fed radio from one person while another person is talking. These concepts that I'm sure she's familiar with, but may not be intimately familiar with, the way that Margo and Aleta are. And
yeah, she's not like a technical subject matter expert on this stuff.
No. This has to be incredibly mentally taxing for her.
I would think so. I think you're alluding to this scene about the time that the bullfinch really yanks on her chain. Let me ask you this. I thought maybe what I was supposed to understand is Margo is misinterpreting that as a chain yank when she's really trying to go at. Because, like, what did. I guess I'm confused on what Margo said that might have been expressing loyalty to NASA.
Well, she said something like, we're not going to do this like some kind of police state. And that triggered
Arena.
It was the evaluation of her form of government, right?
Okay. Yeah, that was a little spicy, I guess.
Yeah. And so Arena fires back. But does it in a way I like, that is both talking to Aleta Like, your loyalties need to remain with, you know, no longer with NASA, right? Because she's with Helios, and worked out well.
Yeah. I, like I said, I'm it, like, it does feel like this stuff is better written. But
no, it's well
is
written,
it possible
yeah.
that it's just coming out of the mouths of people that we care a lot more about, and we're just, I don't think so, but I'm trying to be fair.
No, I think it, so what it does is it has the benefit of relying on a lot of past work that they've done, right?
True.
Like, in this scene, when I hear Margot and then Irina pass this on, when she says we need to work the problem, and Elaida looks over like, huh.
That's a very, Margot thing.
Right?
Like,
she's recognizing something. And that comes from seasons of previous material. Yeah. So, like, you don't have that benefit with Miles and the space smugglers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, yeah, just the other stuff does seem a bit underwritten compared to this stuff. But you're right. Also, it's easier to write when you've got a huge foundation of relationships and history and world building to stand on.
Yeah, you could do a lot of shorthand, whereas with Miles stuff, right. You're really gonna have to spell it out.
It feels like they're shorthanding, but we don't have our notes from previous seasons to fall back on. So we're like, huh? I mean, right. I'm rolling. That's what I'm saying. Like, I guess I feel like I'm rolling with it, but I'm going off a lot of knowledge that I'm bringing in from outside the show. And again, maybe the show's right, and this audience is going to just be on the ball with this stuff. But I feel like, you know, I just wish they would take their platform and maybe do a little bit more education on that. Or build it out a little bit more to make it feel real, so people can, it's like directly applicable to people's lives. But
yeah,
like I said, maybe people already get it.
Maybe so. All right, let's go to Ed waking up with a serious hangover. Cinnamon mouse ass hangover. Palmer wants him to sign off on the Helios base pay and bonus rates. He takes the documents under review. Man.
This is fan service. Like, why, Ed waking up with God's own flashlight shining in his face. just looks down between his legs, sees the half-smoked dude, and that line of, like, don't mind if I do, Admiral Baldwin.
and then he's acting like a high schooler caught smoking weed in his bedroom when Palmer comes up.
Right.
Like, trying to shuffle it out the non-existent window. It's...
Right. Like, he's your dad at 2:30 in the afternoon on Saturday being like,
The
late shift's clocking in. And then the evil chuckle that he has when he's got the paperwork and Palmer's screaming outside his door, impotent rage.
And Palmer's like, it's you, did I catch you sleeping? It's noon. And he's like, well, I guess I'm just a lazy fuck. Is that all? Is that what you came over here for?
Question. Do you buy that this would be the case where there's enough of like a separate military command structure versus corporate structure that Danielle could essentially confine Ed to quarters, but he's still a chief executive officer of the company? Like, I
found
kinda
it just
think,
believable that he would be a senior project manager. Yeah.
Danielle's not thinking from a corporate sense. She's only kind of, she doesn't think about, oh God, he's got all this soft power that I need to also sever or get.
And she doesn't really have the authority to do that, right? I mean, this is a Helios matter at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I found it just believable. Yeah. And I don't know that senior project manager Ed is the title that he wanted to go out on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's still an admiral. He'll be an admiral, right? But like, now he's an acting. His acting role is senior project manager.
Yeah, he's just going to be a paperwork pusher. But and I got another question about it that we'll get to when he drops the stuff on the labor committee. But we'll wait to get there.
I think the larger question is: do I buy that the senior project manager would have to sign off on bonus and pay rates? No, I don't. I don't think a project manager has that role. I think that's much more accounting, much more executive level sign-offs.
But it would make sense that Ed would be that tippy top level that might, like, you know, maybe they got the title wrong, but he's got to be the highest ranking Helios personnel there.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So,
yeah, because the commanding, I mean, he's second in command. He was second in command, and now, you know, his commanding officer was NASA. Danielle's NASA. So. All right. Margo tells Irina that they can solve the engineering problems if they take bold action, meaning her and Aleda work together on the project. And Irina tells Margo that she'll be labeled a traitor if she does this, but Margo is willing to risk it if she can get back to work. I was saying this before. The work is her real love. I buy it. I buy it 100%. It's not about power. It's not about Sergey even. It's not even about Aleda. It's about the work. It always has been, always will be.
It's not that those things aren't important to her, but they are subordinate to the work. Capital T, capital W. I think there might be some criticism from people to say, why would the Russians agree to go along with Margo's plan? But I think the way it plays out, the Russians, why wouldn't they? They got everything they wanted. They got a political win. They didn't apply pressure to an American citizen to steal her from the country. Hell no. She was discontent and disgruntled and disappointed in her government for pursuing profits and all that other stuff. So it's like,
according to that coerced speech.
Yeah, I don't know who says no. And so I thought, again, and I could be wrong, but I thought this stuff played pretty beautifully for me. And
as a way to get her and Aleda back together, it's they threaded that needle.
Yeah. Especially since, like, the way they played it is, like, Margo is not, like, there with her fingers crossed, rolling her eyes. Like, she's given that statement, like, this is going to cost her. Like, the American people, all of her friends at NASA, that this is the kind of thing that she's saying is going to make them see and hate her. So there seemed to be, and like I said, she's just starting to pay that price.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
And she pays it so personally right away. Which I really like, but yeah, there are bigger ramifications too.
Yeah. And I do think it's like when she says, I don't care what people think, I know what I did and why I did it, same as now. That's fine, but Margo, you need people. Like, I don't know how you like I feel like you should have learned that lesson a couple seasons ago, but you need people. And if everyone hates you and doesn't trust you, how effective a leader are you going to be?
This is true, yeah.
But she's got the full weight of the bullfinch behind her. I do wonder if we'll see a darker side from Margo. Like, if people don't trust her and like her anyway, like, what happens if people, you know, like, again, she can't do anything about the Americans, but what if the Russians balk at helping her? If, you know, I wonder if they're setting up that woman she made the acquaintance with that helped her with the washer at the vending machine. I wonder if they're setting her up to, like, that's going to be someone that expresses disappointment of Margo and Margo has to deal with.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm not seeing the future angles here, but there kind of have to be some.
I just don't know how you lead a facility or a project of people across multiple nations if you have zero trust and zero like that. As as much as it pains us nerds to hear it sometimes, you got those people skills are important. You know, there's a reason that people who are not as good as programmers as us, not as good at creative as us, might advance faster because they schmooze. They play the game. They go out and golf with the boss.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and Margo doesn't do that shit, so.
One of the questions I have coming out of this scene, and I guess previous scenes as well, is why is Irina so eager to capture this asteroid? Why is she allowing this to happen? Because didn't they make the point that this would disrupt Russia's economy pretty severely? It's a major
status
quo. It's their number one export. Is that right? Or just a major?
Well, it's not
the
number one. They just kind of corner the market in iridium. So that's the big question. They raised that point last episode, and now maybe Russia is extracting a bigger piece of the pie because of that. They need to be bribed, but like that, they're not saying that.
No, they're not.
So like. Yeah, it's bizarre to me because you're right. Russia, the status quo benefits them. So why are they trying to bust their ass?
Yeah. Why wouldn't they be, you know, slow playing this whole thing, hoping they could delay long enough to miss this asteroid? But
yeah, Yeah, because right now, like, they're whatever shakes out the New Deal, it's not going to be a stranglehold on the market for them. So,
no.
But maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of altruism that, like, but I don't feel like
or
that's
maybe
the
they
story
think
they're telling.
Once we, they're not thinking long term. I was going to say, maybe they're thinking once we capture this asteroid and exhaust its resources, we'll still have the number one export of iridium. So get this while we can and then benefit later from our stranglehold. But they're not thinking long term.
The way they're talking, didn't they say there's more iridium in this asteroid that's ever been mined on planet Earth ever?
I believe so, yeah.
So that's...
That would be really long-term thinking.
Imagine if you injected into the world economy all the gold that's ever been mined in one shot, into like it would gold would be devalued massively, and it would probably be a big, because you know gold's got a lot of really insanely useful material properties aside from looking pretty. That so like that would be a good thing, but it would also everybody's got their safe full of gold for the end times, probably not gonna be too happy.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, let's go to the scene where Margo reveals herself to Elaida. She goes to her room, but she's not there. So Margo's just looking around, and when Elaida returns, she's shocked to find Margo, but she runs up and gives her a huge hug.
I thought this was a great decision because it gives us like a little bit of emotional catharsis, and then it sells the... Because Elaida has... defended Margot's innocence. We saw her do it with Bill. You know, it's like, and this seems like this is like a long-standing argument with her fans. Because you imagine, like, the full context of Margot disappears, or she gets killed the day the things blast. And people, like, there's this rumor that Margot is a spy for the Russians, maybe, and there's all this bitterness about that, and then she's alive, but all of the things that her detractors are saying are broadly speaking true. Like maybe you excuse her because of the reason. Having Elaida just completely having a human reaction of I'm so glad you're alive, only to have the knife twisted when she finds out, but maybe you shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Margot that I really loved and admired should have died back then instead of betrayed. It's pretty fucking good, man.
Yeah, and Margot herself wonders that too. Having that reflexive action of like, this is a person that I care deeply about. They're alive when they shouldn't be. I'm gonna run up and I'm gonna hug them.
Yeah.
But then you get a wash of like, oh man, all of the stuff that you know about it comes flooding in after that moment, that reflex, and it's really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. And I think even the staging of putting Elaida in the dorm room, so she's taking a shower, so the door kind of just pops open and lets Margo kind of walk in and rifle through her things. They really amp the shock contrast to its maximum, and that was pretty fun.
Totally. And we'll get back to that scene here.
Because it also, like, there was a little bit of, like, did the bullfinch get cold feet and abduct Elaida or something? Like, what? Where the hell?
Yeah.
There's, like, did the Russians come in? Like, there's a warm kettle here. Her papers are all about. She's got, what the fuck happened? But, no, she was just, washing her hair.
In the dorm shower, yep. So let's go back up real quick to Happy Valley, where Miles tells Lee that Ilya's been lying to him. He's never going to see his wife. And Lee gets extremely upset, saying this is not acceptable, and says he'll handle it. And then the North Koreans send their muscle after Petros.
Again, I don't think they've done a very... Like, I would believe if things have loosened up in North Korea because of their isolation, because of the distance from the motherland, because of the injection of capital and crime... And that corrosive effect, crime's corrosive on the fabric of society, kind of like weakens things for good and ill. But they have not told that story.
No.
The last time Miles got on the base, it required an emergency and a whole bunch of subterfuge. And now he can just go and knock on the outside door. And instead of Lee coming and going to a private area, he just invites him in and has a screaming match in the middle of the North Korean outpost with some North Korean lady monitoring comms 6 feet away. What the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, 100% with you. This did not feel right because they have not told that story.
Yeah. And it feels like Miles is playing a dangerous game because, yeah, he's gotten all this North Korean muscle somehow. But Lee, he's got to follow through on what I consider an impossible plan. Or yeah. We're going to have...
I mean, is that the implied promise here? I suppose. Or... Yeah, I mean, to be working with him, it would be one thing if he just went to Ilya. Lee took his guys, went to Ilya and kicked his ass. Mm-hmm. But to be actively having the muscle with him when he's kicking Ilya out of his bar feels like they're now like he's made promises to Lee.
And I just also it never felt like Lee's got this kind of pull. You know, that like, because I'm saying, okay, you get your four beefiest North Koreans to come, you know, whip this guy's ass. What's in it for them? Some extra foot cream?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, like.
They'll have real severe bunions.
And it seemed like Lee was under maximum suspicion by his people, which makes a lot of sense that he spent so much time with the Americans and maybe that stink never really washed off of him. I don't know, but this plot took, I was not expecting much, but it took a left turn at Albuquerque for me.
All right, well, let's take a right turn and get back to the stuff that we really like. This is where Margo explains to Elaida how she's still alive and why she defected. Elaida does not think her actions were justified, and she tells her how it felt to be there on the day of the bombing. And once all the words have been said and the tears shed, Margo asks Elaida to work the asteroid problem with her.
I found it so gratifying to hear Elaida essentially say over and over again, if only you had gone to the FBI, Margo, none of this would have ever happened. And uh-huh. for all of Margo's bullshit about like, well, I didn't, you know, and then like her argument is essentially, well, I didn't want to face the consequences of my actions because in my own mind, they were justified. Congratulations, every criminal ever. You know, every person uh-huh. who's betrayed an ideal or principle or a movement, it's, you know, it's because, yeah, like she's thinking like, well, you know, at the point where I stole the nuclear reactor design and gave it, but like the very first time pressure was applied, you mm-hmm. could have just gone to the authorities and said, and none of this would have ever happened. And it's really frustrating here to try to justify that bullshit. Especially to Elaida, who shut it down hard and eloquently with her, you know, at our post.
Mm-hmm. Her description of being at that post at the time of the bombing was affecting.
The names she dropped, you know, mm-hmm. the people, that, you know, like starting with Molly, going down to Bill, that he's, you know, he's got his pelvis crushed and his spine destroyed and his life kind of like permanently fucked because of that. And Bill was on like a high point, man. He was feeling appreciated and paid for the first time like this. And then like when they got to Emma, Margot's long, I never even thought of her, her long suffering mm-hmm. assistant. Again, going down at her post because, you know, that's what you do. I thought it was. And then Margot's response, well, if it's all the same to you, I wish I had gone down at my post. Like, I bitterly regret all this stuff. And pivoting to that, to Elaida's regrets, if she.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit, you know, we're going to be talking about You Got Mail in the near future, if not already, because we're recording
How
all this stuff out.
How are you going to connect these dots?
Well, there's a little bit of Tom Hanks and Margot and that she's using information that she gathered on the sly to manipulate Elaida. Like, she heard how passionate Elaida is about the noble, altruistic things and she knows which buttons to push because she's been listening to their conversation. So,
but also because she knows her. And that's the thing. Elaida throws out this line that says, you don't know me anymore.
Yeah.
She doesn't know a part of you that was created after the bombing, but she definitely still knows you deep down. And it works, right? I mean, they work the problem mm-hmm. together. They come up with a plan. So, like, she does know her fundamentally, but Elaida has this other piece of her now because of the things that happened, because of that incident that Margot chickened out of. that yeah now is a part of her as well, and it's sad. It's such a delicate scene that needs to be well executed, and it is here. This is the stuff they really give time to, and the space that it needs.
Yeah, and I thought this was a really well written kind of monologue that they gave Olivia here, Trujillo, and that she delivered it well with just the right amount of like genuine grief and also like barely suppressed rage.
And
not just at Margot, yeah. But at the situation, yeah, at the righteousness situation. And it's like an impressive, it was a long one too. No cuts. I thought it was a real standout scene.
She's had a lot of those. She nails them every time. True. Like I said, the stuff with her and Bill has been excellent throughout this series. And the stuff with her and Margot here is just as good.
Yeah. No, she's a pocket dynamo.
Yeah. One to watch for sure. All right, let's go to Ilya finding Petros in the infirmary. He knows that this was not an accident, even though Petros is claiming it was. He finds Miles and the North Koreans waiting for him in his bar, or at least what used to be his bar, because Miles is taking over the operation. Ilya's out, Milosh is in.
The way Miles Corleone here is talking... At what point did Ilya talk himself out of the operation? Because it felt like that Miles was willing to like let him keep the bar or let him keep a piece of it or was trying to, but like I don't know. Because like this Miles is so different than any Miles I've ever conceived of before, that like I felt like you could get me here with Miles, but I needed a couple more episodes.
Agreed. There is a hardness to Miles that I have never felt before. And I understand that it's now he has something that he is desperate not to lose again. But at the same time, I've never seen this side of Miles before.
Yeah, this is like Miles. This is like if in The Godfather, if Michael went off to visit his father at the hospital and then they cut back to him going to have to go to Italy and hide out. Uh-huh. Or maybe post Apollonia. And like he's got that hardness and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, like, oh my God, if you skip the killing Captain McCluskey and you skip him fleeing to Italy and falling in love with his ultimate gangster wife and getting that taken away, like the character doesn't work. And I feel like this is like a fundamentally goofy, lightweight dork that has failed up in the life and is at the end of, and he went from that to a criminal mastermind who's got the balls and the connections to get all this North Korean muscle, and it I don't quite buy it.
Yeah, and I really wish I did, because I think there's a solid story there.
Yeah.
It's just the shortcuts that have needed to be taken have kind of undermined it. I could totally buy this. I could totally buy Lee being his muscle and Ilya being out, because I saw this coming from the beginning.
Yeah, we talked about it.
This guy's got a thing he needs to support his family. He's going to take it by hook or by crook. Okay, mm-hmm. He's given a taste of it. And when that's taken away, of course he fights back. And that's a great story. Mm-hmm. It's just the execution isn't quite there.
Yeah, I agree.
Let me ask you this. Does Miles realize he's taking over a bar that... Admiral and Senior Project Ed Manager, or Senior Project Manager Ed, has just befriended the owner of. Is this going to be a problem for him?
That's a damn good question. And does, like, I guess the real question is, does Ed care? Because like I think Ed might have cared, but he's got a new project now. He's got a better way to fuck with Danielle.
But what if he can fuck with Danielle on every level?
That's what I'm saying. Like going back to the fan service of this and how much fun it's been to watch. Like this is all true, but the fact that this is all this fun is being had at the service of just sabotaging good Danny is really hard to swallow.
We'll be right back after this spacewalk.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Strap in. We're diving into more For All Mankind. It is. I'm waiting. I really want to see her reaction to all this.
Especially the Ed, especially the stakes for the world that are happening here. It's like, okay, like maybe you're personal and you're petty, and if it was just a normal program, but like a once in a generation chance for Earth to get a leg up, like that is a whole other line of petty, man.
Yeah, that's the kind of petty. Potentially strangle that opportunity just to stick it to one person that made a choice you don't like.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Yeah, that kind of short-sighted, arrogant pettiness is usually reserved for, like, multi-billionaires and, I don't know, despot kings. It's
sure.
It's a weird look for Admiral Baldwin, I think.
Yeah.
What would Karen say?
I don't know. I don't know what Karen would say.
Karen fucked Danny, though, so what kind of...
Yeah.
Ultimately, what kind of judge anything is she?
All right, let's go over to Sam continuing to petition her people to unionize. Ed comes in, joins the conversation with some information about Helios' new bonus structure. It's not good, Bob. Ed suggests they shut the base down and everyone starts chanting strike. Union leader Ed.
It's interesting to see them kind of speed run all the, like, well, they can't do that. We have a contract. Well, their fine print says they can change the contract anytime. It kind of surprises me that you can change pay, hazard pay, terms like that.
You could challenge that legally, but good luck doing that in any kind of realistic time frame from
Mars. and then the other thing is this whole binding arbitration of the companies choosing. That's one of those things. There's a whole bunch of games of legal chicken that we're playing between labor and management right now. There's the, you know, there's this one, the like binding arbitration. There's the everyone signing EULAs that say a whole bunch of nonsense, and those are
that
binding.
You couldn't
there's a whole bunch of things that like we're waiting for a landmark, like some kind of landmark case to be like, is this really because. You know, usually these kind of like novel legal theories don't hold up when there's like real malfeasance at play. And that's what it feels like you're playing with here at Mars. Like you already got like halfway to indentured servitude. Now you've got the company store. Mm-hmm. Like this seems like the kind of shit that the Supreme Court likes to kick down just when you think you've won. But
And until then, it is. It's a scary thing. It's like, okay, well, yeah, you can't sue us, and you have to arbitrate with our arbitrator, and regardless of what that arbitrator says and its legal standing or what and the facts of the matter, you're going to have to accept it because...
Yeah, it's a way to subvert the justice system, which is crazy. I mean, yeah. On a fundamental level, that is insane that a company could just write some words and the justice system does not apply to them.
But... So That's far,
crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, so far, no one's put like you owe us your firstborn in a EULA. So
it hasn't
far,
been egregious enough.
We
to
haven't
get the
shipped
now.
Shipped people from Mars at the tune of $150,000 that they're personally owed for. Yeah. So, like I said, that's but it's.
Can I do that? Can I write something that someone can agree to that nullifies their rights as a human being and completely subverts my responsibility for it in our justice system? Can I do that?
I mean, I had a lawyer tell me once, this is America. You can be sued or sued for anything, including breathing. You know, like, mm-hmm. About the only thing you can't be sued for is you dying, you know? yeah, it's like, I think, yeah, you that's the thing. It's like, you can do whatever you can get away with.
Right. But I don't have the money to get away with it.
Or nah, you don't got the money to give away shit, man. You can't even get away with unpaid parking tickets. You got to get seven figures before you can say fuck that.
I could barely get away with this podcast. So obviously this is Ed sticking it to Danielle. Just get her arms flapping around, right?
Yeah.
I do wonder. It makes me question. Okay, how much of Ed is just getting back at Danielle, and how much of Ed feels like this is unjust? And kind of roots for the underdog, you know, him going to the bar here with Ilya and recounting his time of like, hey, I used to be this guy that's still sniffing, I don't know, booze hound Navy guy. Maybe there was a time in Ed's life where he would have been sympathetic to all this stuff. Do you think that's making a return, or is it just the Danielle stuff?
I'm highly skeptical of any altruism. Like that evil laugh did not sound like this is unjust. This is the latest outrage from Helios, and I'm finally seeing things from the common man's perspective. This felt more like a knife I can plunge into her back. Look, if there is any possibility for me to be like Admiral Baldwin being shocked of the class consciousness, I would desperately cling to that because I want to believe that there's something more than just his vain. I'll throw something out. Is this some kind of Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, sundowning like this? Is this bizarre? Is there any kind of cognitive reason for him to be this?
He's got Mars brain. Yeah.
Because like when my grandfather in the process of dying at Alzheimer's could really terrorize a hospital unit. Like, wildly out of character behavior from this man, the way he would treat doctors and nurses and the way he would treat his personal dignity, not in his right mind. Is there a chance that some of this is from Ed just kind of losing it at the higher level? And you know, part of people's reaction to that is, in a lot of cases, heightened aggression because you're confused.
Yeah, yeah.
You're paranoid. You think people are out to get you? Are they maybe playing with that like there's the physical signs, but also maybe there's some mental cognitive decline? Because that would make him a lot more sympathetic. He's just a victim of his physiology.
I don't think they're playing it that way.
Well, then there's no fucking altruism here. So I think he's just being a shitter.
This is a warning to future generations because it doesn't apply yet. But when you smoke weed in microgravity, all of that THC congregates in your head. The rest that would go to your body, the body high you usually get goes to your head and you do insane shit. So watch out. Smoke lightly. That's what the smoking warning is about at the beginning of this episode.
True.
It's not about cigarettes or nicotine or tar. Yeah. It's about smoking in microgravities.
Smoking here on Earth is very cool and based and it makes people like you. But up in space, it's too risky. The higher oxygen concentrations, the microgravity... That makes perfect sense.
This will be relevant in 2062. Okay. This is a terrible time for Helios to pull this shit, right? Is it so tone deaf from a corporation thinking, well, we're just going to screw these people? Or is this like the opening salvo of a negotiation?
Well,
let's lowball them so that when they come back with a counteroffer, it gets closer to what we're willing to accept. Closer to the status quo.
Well, that was one question I was going to ask you. Is this a bombshell? Because I think what you're supposed to understand is this is stuff that's being approved and it's going to go in effect after everybody works their shifts, and it's going to change the bonus structure. So like all those people who are like grinding to get to their 50 point bonus now got to go to 500, or was that 5,000? It was a crazy increase.
It's 500 to 5,000, which is a 10x increase.
But now they're finding out before what the plan is. So it's like, I think that, and it seemed like that was a good plan, that that Sam was having a hard time getting people to put their financial necks on the line with the promised payouts that they were going to get. But now that they found out that their pay is going to be garbage and they're only going to get it for a couple months before they essentially become a backwater to the solar system. So I think Ed really did fuck them by letting this information out early. Because now they can get organized and they can slow things down right away. And
it wasn't such a misplay by Helios. It's more they didn't expect it to get out.
So what do you think, what do you think Dev's going to do? Because I'm starting to get an inkling.
Yeah, when he gets up here and he sees that there's a full-on strike happening. Well, he's too late, right? I mean, he can't do anything from Mars once he gets there, because the two-month journey is just barely inside the window of capturing this asteroid. But the plan is an eight-week plan. He won't be there in time to deal with this.
Because I was wondering if he could do, like, land on Mars and be like, all right, I am a Martian now. Helios is a Martian company. I am going to argue for us getting the biggest part of this pie. Like, these were old Earth policies and plans. I'm here on the ground now. This ain't going to fly. Like, what if
are Martians kind of thing?
Yeah, like he leans back into Harambe, maybe in a cynical way, but in a way that would, you know, increase. Because remember, his plan was to make Mars a better place. And I think he's not foolish enough to think that Mars can be a better place with, like, minimal bootstrap funding. So, like, he might be arguing for, like, Mars should get the lion's share of this. Or at least its fair share.
So is he going to try and capture and hold ransom this asteroid? Is that what you're, like, he's going to grab it and put it in Mars orbit?
Like, he's going to be, like, he's going to, instead of trying to fight this movement, he's going to harness it. To be like, follow me, I'll make sure we get what's ours, and we have all the negotiation, because always, at any time, push the button that sends this out into the asteroid, out into the, like, you know, like, until it's in Earth's orbit, we have all the control. I don't know. I
could see it. I just wonder if he's going to be too late getting there. He's going to have to make that case en route, right?
Yeah, and I think he's capable of doing that. And I don't know. Maybe they'll also play, because they said that the thing has to be ready to go in 8 weeks. And the guys that are rabble rousing are not the ones planning the mission. They're the labor that's going to do it. But I think the timing might land that he can land and harness this right as it's a crucial. You know, they need to get to work.
Yeah, right as they're executing, right? They've done all the prep, and then here comes Dev on the day of the mission to say...
And there's no one left to Helios to oppose him. He kind of cleaned house, so he's kind of the supreme dictator of that. So that'd be an interesting play for him, to go either false populist or full populist, because I'm a Martian now. Fuck Earth.
Sure. And he said he's never coming back. So, and Earth and needs might us. Be Earth need, he's a Martian
Earth
now.
Needed Helios when it was an Earth company. Now that it's a Martian company, they really need it.
Yeah, I could see it. I don't know. It's going to be super interesting when Dev gets there, is all I know.
Yeah. I'm and like really I said, excited. That's the thing that's like, I'm not super sweating, because we've said it many times, is sometimes you can get away with shitty writing to get to a result that then can be good. And people will forgive you. It's like, Miles kind of sucked, and Sam, you know, they didn't really do that. And the North Koreans, but like, you know, next season when they've got a well-established crime storyline and a well-established labor storyline, as long as that's good, then bootstrapping it with bullshit will quickly forget. So none of these missteps are fatal. It's just they need to start making the characters better and it more impactful and substantial pretty soon for them to save it.
Yeah. And in some scenes, they're dropping little things that add to that. I love in this scene how they drop the... They name check Petros, who is used here as a motivation to start the union because, oh, look, he got hurt in this accident because he's been overworked, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a lie.
Yeah.
We know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was really funny.
But that could absolutely be a motivation for people. Stuff like that really goes a long way, I think, just dropping that into scenes occasionally.
It's so historical, the fact that a lot of history hinges on, you know,
misunderstandings
and miscommunications mm-hmm. and, you know, things that seemingly are irrelevant. And yeah,
I love it. All right, let's go to the final scene here where news of Margot's greatly exaggerated death hits the airwaves, the news, as she does a press conference, throwing NASA and America under the bus. Alita packs up to go home, hating Margot.
Yeah, no,
not hating her. She says she doesn't hate her, but she'll never forgive her. And she does not want to watch this clearly false speech.
No, it's a humiliating speech for Margot to give. It's a tough one for Alita to hear.
Well, she can rest easy in the knowledge that her jacket is fire. This jacket
really is
so cool, man.
It looks like something someone wear on The Expanse, you know? It looks like Monica, the reporter, like something she would wear. It's next level.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Alita feels a little betrayed that maybe Margot used her, because now it's come out that Margot's taken over this project on Star City's behalf? Where do you think that Alita's going to get it twisted and think that this is Margot trying to get her glory and power back? And because that's why, like, that the venom that she turns the television off as she tries to, like, spin this to, like, I'm eternally grateful to all the brilliant scientists and engineers, and she just, like, flips it off. And I wonder, because we saw the speech that she gave to the Bullfinch, that, you know, hey, that's not what's matters to me. It's all about the work. But, you know, Alita heard, like, hey, we're doing this for all mankind, right? And then in the mm-hmm. morning she hears that Margot's doing it now, being promoted to the director at such and such. So I wonder if there's a little bit of Jacques Hughes going on here.
Yeah, I could see it. Yeah, I'm... I'm trying to get a read on how much Alita understands Margot as a person, because I think that was kind of turned on its head with this reveal that she's alive. And I think Alita's probably thinking, I don't actually understand this person.
Yeah.
They're making choices I would never make.
Yeah. Which was that's kind of what she said.
Maybe
you had choices
think,
all along.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And your choices in the beginning were a hell of a lot better than your choices at the end, but still, you made the bad choice every single time, so...
So maybe she does think Margot might just be in it for the power now?
Could be.
I don't know. But that's it, man. It's the end of the episode.
All right, let's do some feedback. FAM@baldmove.com is how you send feedback. But first, I want to give a note that if you want to find out what else we're doing besides For All Mankind, because we're doing a lot of stuff, going to be doing a lot of stuff in 2024, got a lot of fantastic Christmas stuff happening right now. Best way to follow us is on all of our social medias, @baldmove, except for TikTok, we're @baldestmove there. We also have a Discord, discord.baldmove.com, if you want to connect and talk about each of the episodes with a fun community of friendly fans. Check it out, discord.baldmove.com. Finally, if you'd like to support what we're doing here at Bald Move, we could use and would appreciate it. Support.baldmove.com to help us keep producing podcasts and get a bunch of nice stuff for yourself. Extra bonus content, ad-free feeds, etc., etc. All right, ForAllMankind@baldmove.com. Let's get to the feedback. Okay, first up, the feedback is Chris DiCapo says, I'm loving your For All Mankind coverage. Well, thank you, Chris. I'm thinking they ate Bad Danny after he died. They're starving. He's perfectly preserved in the Martian cold, a la Yellow Jackets. Mmm, tasty, tasty. Just saying. Merry Christmas. Jim, I got a distressing amount of feedback this week, all saying that the solution, the true Martian Thanksgiving is
a
roast Danny.
The bad tradition to start.
You stuff a Danny with a chicken, and you stuff the Danny into a turkey. You slice them, you bone them, you slice them. This is insanity. This is not actually something that will happen on this show, correct? Oh, Jesus, no.
I mean, it is a solution. And if things get desperate enough, I mean, would you rather die or would you rather eat Danny?
I'm thinking. That's not clean meat, you know? That's a bottom feeder. It's not good.
Sure, sure. It's eating a lamprey. It's eating a... Yeah. One of the sucker fish out of the fish tanks.
Chris says, P.S. The Star Wars Holiday Special 2 is freaking hilarious. So thank you. He's talking about our insane Christmas project that we did this year, as we do sometimes. Check it out on youtube.com/baldmove. Only if you want, like, unhinged Star Wars Christmas content. PPS. My brother's movie, The Inventor, is now out on video on demand. Check it out on Prime, Apple TV, Google Play, Vudu, and YouTube Movies, many local cable and television providers. So this is The Inventor, and it's a claymation-esque kind of Ralph Rankin Bass. I don't know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. This is actually secretly happening after a three-drink Christmas movie podcast, and I'm still a little drunk.
Uh-huh.
And it purports to be the life of Leonardo DiCaprio. Says, if you like it, spread the word. Indie films need all the help they can get. Voices of Stephen Fry, Daisy Ridley, Matthew Berry.
What?
So hot right now.
I thought this was going to be some indie joint.
It is some indie joint.
Straight to video or something. That's amazing.
It's got a 77 on Rotten Tomatoes. So, yeah.
Inventor. All right. Nice.
Extended Bald Move family. If it sounds like it's up your alley, check it out. B says, I have a quick question. When Miles got his loner Helios suit in episode 4, he mentioned it. Smell. Did Danny Stevens die in that suit in the episode 5 flashback? Maybe they ate bad Danny. Maybe they didn't. But my headcanon is now that his Helios suit is in rotation at Happy Valley base.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. They're not going to throw away a perfectly good spacesuit. And yeah. I think your theory holds a lot of water and gross.
Maybe he got roasted. I mean, it's a thin atmosphere up there in Mars, right?
And he's sitting in full view of the sun.
Yeah, maybe his radiation cooked him in that suit.
Because if he was preserved,
bad. It's that it smells like human. Mm-hmm.
If he was preserved, there should be a smell. If that meat was good.
Right. Maybe, you shit yourself when you die, right?
Oh, right. You asphyxiate. The pressure differential gets you.
Yeah.
You shit yourself.
Especially on Mars. Especially
that wouldn't necessarily spoil the meat.
No, but it would stink the suit up. So maybe maybe that's the problem.
All right, I think that's the only cannibal question. Oh, no, we got a lot more, but those are the only distinct ones. So many people wrote into the hot take that they're going to eat bad Danny, so I blame
Yellow Jackets. The trouble is, how do you cook bad Danny? That's the real problem. You can't eat raw bad Danny. He's been sitting out too long.
You science that shit like Matt Damon. Matt Damon
Make
can eat potatoes for a
stove,
year on Mars.
Methane stove.
If Matt Damon can eat potatoes for a year on Mars, they can gnaw on Danny's ass for a month or two. I'm saying.
Totally.
Cincinnati Joe, hometown Joe, says, how did I miss, or did I miss how Kelly searching for signs of life helps the asteroid capture? Because if it doesn't, why does she need to go on the urgent flight Dev is taking? Doesn't NASA and the other countries get a say about the whole team of people and their gear coming to Happy Valley when they're in the middle of such an intense effort? What's the urgency for her mission? Maybe Dev just wants to keep her and her shares happy with him, deciding to go to Mars. If that's all there is, then her team and maybe her can go later as was planned. Doesn't seem like this benefits anyone other than the scriptwriters. Even more obvious is bringing a child. What would NASA and some others say about the sudden development, especially in the middle of the asteroid capture and the tense international situation about it? Dev plans to commandeer Kelly's robots, the worst thing to do would be to bring Kelly and her kid, especially with Ed there. Just commandeer them on Earth for the greater good. The other orgs would be okay with that.
This is a good question, because I talked about, like, from a labor standpoint, you know, how the Helios people will think about, you know, their deprivations, and you got people bringing their family here now because they're the old man of Mars's daughter. What the fuck? How much does it bother you that they are like, why is Dev accommodating her? Does he need her shares that bad? Is there a way for her to claw those back?
As far as bringing her kid, I don't know, because in that moment where he agrees to do that, he is also feeling some particular familial regret as well. Yeah.
True.
So he views himself as that kid. Like, would he want to rip his mother away from himself as a kid? No. No, he didn't want that to happen, but it did. And he doesn't want to replicate that with Kelly.
Does he? Because I thought he was doing... I think we talked about this in the podcast, but my recollection is that I thought he was making this offer for Kelly to refuse. And yes, he's moved it. She's trying to find a way to do the science and, you know, keep her relationship with her son. But he fully expected her to, like, so he could guilt-free just be like, oh, well, you know, I wanted to do your project, but obviously you want to be a mom, so there.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been the case, but I think what we saw with his family, I don't know, because it does happen after, right? So maybe he changed his mind somewhere along the way. He did kind of a nasty thing at the beginning, and then it morphed into a good thing.
I think Joe's core point here about him needing Kelly's shares is the most plausible thing, because otherwise he would just, yeah, like, who cares? It's hard for me to see how those robots, maybe they can use them as automated workers, but then you're right back into being a hot water Kelly if you just, you know, steal her projects, her robots for your own project.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the impetus for him to take the team was in the first place. I don't remember if, because he's not going up there because they need him up there. He's going up there because he wants to call the shots.
Take advantage of the opportunity, yeah. And yeah. It felt to me like this was something he was making up as he went. Like, when she's like, what the fuck? You know, you didn't tell us about any of this. And what are we going to do about this? He's just like, shit. Yeah, we'll just bring him and you can come and you come with me. Like, it's like he's just seat of his pants. And, like, again, expecting her to be like, oh, that's crazy, I can't do that. And then it's her fault, not his.
Yeah, but he's taking her team, so she needs to go, I guess. Yeah, I don't know at all. They told that story well enough for me. I think, especially with the stuff we learned about his family in episode 6.
Kurt says, in the bonus content provided by Apple TV, there's been a news story talking about the formation of the Mars 7. In this story, it's mentioned that China and Canada chose not to join the 7. I can understand why China would be hesitant to join, but do you have any speculation as to why Canada would not want to? Do you believe that this will be a political plot point this season? P.S. I hope they don't eat bad Danny. Now we're supposed to be done with the eating Danny plot lines, okay? It's leaking. It's leaking into the other feedback, Jim.
Maybe it has something to do with the term Canadian bacon. Maybe they I don't know. Where was Danny from? Danny a Houston boy? He's a Houston boy. I don't know, man. Why wouldn't Canada want to join? That seems wild.
Is there something about their economy being more reliant on oil, maybe, that, like, they would be disproportionately affected?
I don't know, because the Helium 3 stuff was already happening. That was already in full effect, so.
And, like, they have all those, like, the oil shale, but that really wasn't developed until kind of the 2000s. So it's not like a economy sector that would be shut down. But I would be surprised if there's not a hell of a lot of, I mean, there's a shit ton in Alaska. So that's the only thing I can think of. Economically, it's like they didn't think it would make sense.
Yeah, maybe they were being asked for a pretty big ante and they decided the pot wasn't worth it.
Because Canada's, of course, been a big part of the International Space Station. I mean, the whole giant manipulator arm, that's all Canada. So
Canada arm, yeah.
Canada arm. So that'll do it for this week at For All Mankind. Once again, the number for our line is FAM@baldmove.com. Quick note, this is the last episode that we're going to record before our Christmas break. Now, we are recording, if everything goes right, 2 episodes in advance, so we shouldn't miss any delays. But we think of us as we're in the Apollo capsule and we're about to go behind the moon. So we're going to be doing stuff, but the communications will be blocked. We won't actually be able to respond to email until we come back from behind the dark side of the moon and get all those transmissions. So we won't be considering feedback on episode 7 and 8, but we should be able to catch back when we return in January, starting with feedback again. So keep that in mind, fam@baldmove.com. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Appreciate having you along for the road. Until the next time, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.